As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The big thing on Total Soccer Show, the show where we dig into some of soccer's meatiest topics. Today, we're talking about sports betting on the back of the news of Ivan Toney's ban. The Brentford striker was found guilty of breaching English Football Association betting rules on 232 occasions between February 2017 and January 2021 and has been banned from the sport for 8 months. Toney won't play again until January 17th, 2024, and he isn't even allowed to train with his team for the next 4 months. Now, Toney's far from the first player to be punished for betting activity, and his case highlights the influence of the gambling industry on the beautiful game. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, we've got a bit of a duopoly going on here. Just me and Big T, Taylor Rockwell. Hello.
Hello. It's been a long time since it was just you and me, I think. Am I forgetting something recently? Otherwise, I feel like it's been a good little bit since it was just you and I chatting it up.
To quote my favorite band, it's been a while.
Been a while.
Indeed.
To quote your favorite band / Comedy Bang Bang running bit.
Two things. What's your saying? It could be two things.
Yes, it can be two things.
That's How long have I known you?
Precisely.
How long have I been speaking to you and I didn't nail your phrase?
It's fine.
Disgusting behavior from me. Taylor, today we are talking about sports betting. Now, this is an interesting one, obviously, for many reasons. It's a controversial topic within, say, the Premier League with show sponsorships and all that kind of jazz. We can get into it. And also, as I mentioned, Ivan Toney isn't the first player to be banned for this kind of activity. And in the US, we've also seen some recent instances in the NFL with players falling foul of betting rules. Do you want me to read out the rules or is that boring? What do we want to do about this, Taylor?
I would like that because I think that kind of establishes some good information. And also, I'm not sure I know exactly what the rules are. I didn't realize how different the rules could be from league to league until I was looking at North America, where each professional league seems to have different rules for gambling and what constitutes gambling even. So, yes, rule away, my friend.
Okay, so the rules for the English Football Association, the FA, this is Rule E8, to which Ivan Toney and many of his predecessors have fallen foul. A participant shall not bet, either directly or indirectly, or instruct, permit, cause, or enable any person to bet on the result, progress, conduct, or any other aspect of or occurrence, or in connection, it's very legal, or in connection with a football match or competition or any other matter concerning or related to football anywhere in the world, including, for example, and without limitation, the transfer of players, employment of managers, team selection, or disciplinary matters. And part B of the rule where a participant provides to any other person any information relating to football which a participant has obtained by virtue of his or her position within the game and which is not publicly available at that time. The participant shall be in breach of his rule where any of that information is used by that person for or in relation to betting. Now, Ivan Toney has fallen foul of, it appears, placing bets on particular game moments or games themselves. There's been some different instances of betting rules being breached in the past, Taylor. One of the more famous ones in English soccer, Joey Barton, who in 2017 was banned for 18 months. He was also fined £30,000. Tony's been fined £50,000, by the way, which is, you know, it's small change, I suppose, for a Premier League soccer player, but still reasonably significant figure. Joey Barton was fined for placing 1,260 bets. His ban was originally 18 months. It was reduced to 5 because it would have basically ended his soccer career if it was the full 18. More recently in 2020, Kieran Trippier. Now, I mentioned about influencing transfers as well. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Kieran Trippier and Daniel Sturridge did the same thing in 2018. Kieran Trippier got a 4-month ban for bets placed over his move to Atletico Madrid. Essentially, the story goes that he was telling friends to, you know, I'm going to move to Atleti. You might want to lump on at the bookmakers in this instance.
And I think that's the when you begin Law E8 with directly or indirectly, I believe that is what they're referencing, that you can't give information that would allow other people to make wagers and you can't have other people make wagers on your behalf.
That's right.
I am still confused how these people get caught. And I don't mean that in like, it's so obvious. Genuinely, is it tax returns? Is it they're seen at a betting parlor? Do they post something when they shouldn't? I don't know how individual players seem to get nabbed in this way, but it does tend to happen every now and then. And I'm wondering what the protocol is there, or how, if it's just sort of like a hotline, a gambling hotline where they get turned in. That one I still don't really have any insight into.
I mean, we can only speculate on that, I suppose, but I would imagine it's when they're getting sloppy. And if one bet is discovered at, say, they're using a particular bookmaker, then it's easy to find 231 others, I suppose, on that same account. But, you know, anecdotally speaking, you'd hear, like, Arsenal players in the 90s talking openly about, I used to get my friend to place all my bets for me. I'm not going to name any names or anything. This is all out there. How it's quite common in soccer for betting to be part of the culture. And that's something we should also talk about later in this episode, Taylor, about the cultural aspect of betting.
Yeah.
But it's not unusual. A few other names, Andros Townsend, Marta Demichelis and Cameron Jerome, also found guilty of betting in the English system as well. So, yeah, it goes on a lot. And as to whether you get caught, I suppose maybe it's rife, and these are small instances where it's happening. We can only speculate on that, Taylor. But I don't know. It's a tricky situation, and it's one which is influenced by the fact that sports betting and gambling has a massive. It plays a massive part in, say, the Premier League. In terms of...
I mean, that's the thing that I also find confusing about this, and I think to start, we come at this not even really from two different, like, you're on one side, I'm on the other, but just more so, I think betting is more, or gambling is more common. It's interesting to me that I feel like you all call it betting instead of gambling. I feel like betting places, betting odds. But I think it's much more common in England, it seems to be, or in the UK.
Yeah.
And so I think that's changing a little bit. I think it's becoming more common in the United States. But I think it took Daryl explaining to me how much it was just standard practice of you get your wages at the end of a shift or like at the end of 2 weeks or whatever, and then you're going to go to the pub and you're going to like play some wagers, and how many people would sort of gamble away their entire paycheck really, really quickly because you can just kind of do it anywhere. And I think when you then have gambling sponsors on the front of shirts and on the sleeves and on the advertisements and sponsoring awards at the end of the season, I saw that one that I thought was really interesting. I forget which group it was that point like posted different photos of Ivan Toney winning awards and like lifting them up in front of gambling sponsors and being like, so that's fine. That's okay. You can have the gambling sponsor behind him supporting the thing, but he can't place the bet. That's where it gets a little bit confusing to me, when you have gambling everywhere around it, except with anybody affiliated with it, basically.
Yeah. And perhaps we should have said this earlier on, but just to be clear to why it's bad for soccer players to bet on sports, it's integrity, isn't it? Obviously, it can be linked to match fixing. It can link to all kinds of shenanigans. And it's basically, say with, tipping someone off on your transfer, it's effectively insider trading through gambling.
Yeah, yeah. So. And I think the slippery slope argument applies pretty well here, that sure, you can start off maybe, like I think the NFL, you're not allowed to wager on any professional sport at all. Like Major League Baseball, I think you can't bet on any baseball games, but other sports are fine. Same thing with hockey. But I think about it like this, that if you can bet on other, like if you're betting surreptitiously on other sports and then you start betting on football because like, I've been losing, but I know this sport, I know this game. And then maybe along the way you start to lose a little bit more. There could be a moment when, well, I know we're playing this team and if we don't win, then like I'll stand and make a bunch of money. Like, I think that's the idea, that it very quickly can corrupt and become, yeah, influencing matches, match fixing, all that type of stuff. And then oftentimes you will also get the concern, or occasionally the justified concern, of organized crime getting involved. If you've got a player who's throwing games or shaving points, if you're in the NBA or college basketball, then it can even spread from there and become more of an organized thing, and that can itself be a massive problem.
Yeah, of course. So obviously we don't want sports people betting in particular. It's not a desirable thing to happen. But there's nuance here, and you have to see Ivan Toney, a young man, wearing a betting logo on his shirt at his employer's behest every single day. Doing something which is culturally very popular in the country in which he resides and was brought up. It's a challenging position to be in, Taylor.
It absolutely is. And I mean, I think about the documentary about Michael Jordan, when it's very clear he's a gambling addict. He's a full-blown gambling addict who gambles on everything all the time and will find a way to make wagers. And I think that is, certainly Michael Jordan takes it to a new level, but if you're a 20-year-old who's being paid the amount that Premier League players are being paid, or a 25-year-old or whatever, and the incentive is to just be incredibly competitive and always competing and always working and always trying to best the other people around you, like I think it's pretty natural that you're going to throw some money down unofficially on games or like, you know, talking trash with a person who plays for another team. I think that happens all the time in every sport. And so I think there's probably like an unofficial betting like system, not even a system, just there's unofficial bets that happen. And I think that is, for some reason, accepted and fine and celebrated if it's Michael Jordan. But then when we get sort of wind of Ivan Toney betting over 200 times, it becomes, well, no, this is totally wrong, and it calls the game into disrepute or whatever. I understand why you need to have those rules. It just simultaneously feels very selective in the application or the prosecution.
Yeah. Now perhaps, Taylor, for the benefit of the listener, we should probably lay out our positions on betting. But I think you've mentioned there that neither of us are puritanical about it or massively endorsing the industry. But like, I think we come from slightly different positions. So full disclosure for me, I have worked in sports betting and have done for the best part of my career in soccer. The first job I had in soccer out of college was for a sports betting company, writing betting previews. That's basically how I got my break in this industry. And since then, I actually wrote down the amount of betting people I've worked for, just to be completely transparent with this. I've worked for Betfair, LeoVegas, DraftKings, FanDuel, Colossus Bets, and currently I am on a TV show called Live on the Line, which is BetMGM's daily betting show. I go on that once or twice a week to talk soccer. And I also work in sports betting PR for several companies as well. So I'm very much in this sphere. And for me, I think not only have I worked professionally in betting, but it's been kind of part of my life and upbringing culturally. Because when you're in the UK, for better or worse, there's betting stores on every high street. When I used to go to the games, you know, every week with my dad and my brother, there's betting places within the stadium at Selhurst Park, home of the famous AFC Richmond.
Wait, they're in the stadium?
Yeah. So we go every to Selhurst Park.
I did not
go
know
inside,
that.
And you get a bar at the drink at the bar before the game, which doesn't face the field because you can't drink alcohol facing the field. There's like some double doors
again.
But in every bar,
the weirdness of your rules are odd to me.
It is. But like, I remember it vividly. Next to the bar, in every bar, and there's probably 10 or 15 of them in Selhurst Park itself. There certainly was back in the day. Like little Ladbrokes. Ladbrokes is a betting peddler, and they had little stools where you'd fill out a little bit of paper and you write down your bets, and it'll be like the thing that everyone would do, just put like £1 on it and stuff. And it's not, I think there's a difference culturally in the UK and the US, because certainly before this kind of controversy has arisen with players being banned, betting's not really a dirty word as it might be considered, or it's not considered as problematic as it might be in the US. And I think there's maybe some reasons for that, because legal betting is quite in its nascent period in the US. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago when there was a federal law that was passed that let states, individually, state by state, decide whether to have legal sports betting. And at last count, if I'm correct, it's something like 30 or 33 states have legal sports betting, either online or in sportsbook. So it's basically it's the Wild West a little bit. If new states are opening up all the time. There was a big vote, I think it was late last year, for California to get legal sports betting, and there was huge political spending on it. There was commercials on TV. I may or may not VPN to watch my Fubo from Italy. I see Californian commercials for anti-sports betting, which ironically were mainly sponsored by Tribal Gaming, Indian Gaming, mm-hmm. who didn't want competition for their product on Tribal Land.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
A lot of money.
Which
a lot
makes
of money
sense.
Spent on that.
Yeah. I get it.
But my point in bringing it up is that, you know, betting has been around since the dawn of mankind, but as a business, it's been very much more culturally accepted in the UK than it has in the US. Peaky Blinders, they ran a book.
Mm-hmm. They're not a great example, though. I think when we're looking for legal,
exactly.
I think that was the quest of one season was to become legal bookmakers. I forget they all kind of blend together.
But
I think the point you're making there is, in my mind at least, astute and correct. That I think the ubiquity of gambling and betting and opportunities to do those, stalls to do so, stores, whatever, in England, it makes it more accepted, but I think it also removes some of the stigma, and then it also, I think, removes some of the fear and some of the, like, maybe witch hunt around it a little bit, for better or for worse, whereas I do think in the United States, like, even that difference that I spotlighted earlier, it's telling to me that, like, you all call it betting, and I feel like we would call it gambling, and I do think that, like, oh, he's gambling, like, it just has a more negative connotation. I'm assuming that connects to the prosecution of organized crime in the Prohibition era is my guess as to where we started to see some of the crackdown on that level. But I remember when the poker boom happened here in the U.S. After Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker, I, like many, 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 many other people, got really into poker. And there was a brief window when you could gamble online and you could play poker online through, you know, offshore sites and everything. And then all of those kind of got shut down at once, and it was a big deal and people lost a ton of money. But to your point, there was and sort of still is a Wild West feel to some of the gambling and the ways it can occur and some of the legal loopholes that I think, like, you could have. I will never fully be able to explain this, but you can have, like, slot machines in Virginia because they're based on, like, historical horse races. And so since they've happened in the past, you're, like, not technically gambling. I know that doesn't make any sense, but it's the best way I can explain, like, the gray machines that aren't legal but aren't illegal, and so they exist. And those are the things that I feel like are now in every convenience store and very easily take all of your money because they're addictive and they're flashy and they're easy and they're simple and they happen very quickly, and then suddenly you're out $20 or $50 or whatever it may be.
Yeah, those casino games are a whole different ball game. Mm-hmm. There's various laws and various loopholes that people can get around, and there's quite a big evolution of sports betting in the US at the moment is free to play games. I'm getting quite into nerdy industry stuff. But you say, like, on the NBC Premier League coverage where they have a pick six, pick these six results and you can win $200,000 or whatever it is. That's free to play gaming. It's gambling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it can get around the loophole because it's a free-to-play game, essentially.
Yeah, so the Virginia Lottery has the same thing on their app where you have, like, different free games that you can play, and then, of course, want to increase your odds? Like, put in $5 instead of playing for free. Yeah, so that's where it, again, takes on, I think, it can be a more insidious form because I think you then have to be informed as to the odds and informed as to what you're doing, and I think ideally having support systems in place if maybe you find yourself gambling too often. And I think that is where I start to feel uncomfortable with gambling, is when it starts to feel predatory, or even just it feels like a thing that is knowledge known only to a few. And I think, by contrast, what you're talking about, where it's like everybody's doing it, you throw a pound down, I think when you're in it really quickly, or when you're kind of brought up in it, you understand it more. And I think understanding it can make it simultaneously more common, but it can also help you, I think, have less stigma around it, but then not be afraid to ask, like, wait, how does this work? How do you do this? How does that? And I think the more informed you can be, the better it's always going to turn out.
Absolutely so. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's dig a little bit more into Ivan Toney's ban and how we should feel about it effectively. Back shortly. Mm.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the big thing. We are talking about gaming. Gaming's another synonym that makes it sound less bad than gambling, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, yep. It does. Gaming, it's just a game.
That's so, a really good point, the Nevada Gaming Commission. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So Ivan Toney, 8-month ban, which might get shortened on appeal. Joey Buttons was, after all, as well. There's some controversy about these bans because, you know, if a racist abuse gets less than this. That's not to denigrate the seriousness of what, you know, sports betting can do to the integrity of the game, but it feels questionable here. So how do we feel about that for a start?
About the ban itself?
About the length of the ban. 8 months. Is it way harsh, Ty, to quote one of your favorite movies?
I thought it was until I was reading about the recent ones in the NFL where you've got, I think, 4 players banned for an entire year. They'll miss an entire season. Tony's, I'm assuming it's not like, it's not 8 months of the season, right? So he's banned, he can't start training until September, but it's not as though he's banned for 8 months starting in August. So I think right there, like it's not as harsh as some of the other bans we've seen. And then I think a lot of it depends on what those wagers were, because I do sort of think that there's a world in which you could have like a player's betting system where players are allowed to gamble, but they have to report it and they have to report what they're betting on. Because I don't think, you know, if you have the means and the information behind it, and it's not going to ruin you, I think, like, I don't really have an issue with gaming, gambling, betting. But I think it is that fear of what happens if things are going wrong and Ivan Toney bets on himself not to score in a game or something like that. That is where I think those bans become far more acceptable to me, when there is that fear of corruption of the sport or just things happening that we're not able to see. But you make a very good point that you don't have such harsh punishments with things that I would argue should be far more aggressively punished. So in that way, it does feel harsh, but then there's a £50,000 fee, which is what, maybe his week's wages, probably not even that. So then it simultaneously doesn't feel that harsh either.
Mm. Do we feel sympathy for Ivan Toney in any way, Taylor?
Yes.
We know. Well, yeah. Okay. You've jumped the gun on my question there, but obviously this ban effectively kept him out of the 2022 World Cup.
Yep.
He was nailed on to go to Qatar, but then this story broke the week before the squad was announced, I believe, or the week after, whenever it was around that time. He's obviously going to miss a large part of next season. He was lined up for a transfer. There was transfer rumours surrounding him this summer. He's not going to get that. It's very unlikely that, Chelsea could be, they're pretty wacky. Maybe they'll buy him and have him banned for a little while. But it's harsh, as I mentioned earlier. He's 27. It's not as if he's 19 and super impressionable. But all his life, all his career, he's had sports betting advertising around the field he plays on. He's got a giant Hollywood Bets logo on the shirt he wears every day.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to feel like some sympathy for someone who has got an internet. And as I say, culturally, we don't know how many other players are doing this.
This is the thing.
Been sloppy.
Yeah, that would be my guess. That would very much be my guess. And I think in that way, you could only have but so much sympathy, because he knows he's not supposed to do this. I'm sure there is plenty of instruction at the beginning of every season when HR comes in and says, here are the rules. Reminder, you cannot do this. And I think in that way, he knew that he was breaking a rule. At the same time, when it is on the shirt, in the stadium, you have the stalls at the game, everyone you know in your world gambles, I think there is an element of, I don't know, it's unfair, certainly, but it's also, I think, expecting behavior that is maybe or expecting like them not to engage in behavior that I think is slightly ignorant, I guess. I don't really know how else to explain it other than when it's ubiquitous and then somebody takes part in it to then be like, how could they do this? What an abomination. This is a disgrace to the game. I do think that's a little bit talking out of both sides of their mouth because it's just, it's everywhere. And there's a reason for it to be everywhere. You talked about your history of working for gambling companies. I mean, in terms of the podcast industry and the media industry, gambling companies pay. They're one of the few that consistently advertise and have paid opportunities. And I know plenty of people who augment their wages and writing for newspapers or whatever else by writing gambling columns. And it will pay you every week, and you can write a bunch of them, and it's going to work out. So there's that aspect of it. You look at, like, the Premier League can have the voluntary vote to remove shirt sponsorships, but you look at the championship where two-thirds of championship clubs have betting sponsorships on their kits. The EFL championship itself is sponsored by Sky Bet. And so many mid to lower tier clubs need gambling companies because they will pay money for that shirt that other companies won't. And it's a way that they can make up some of that financial ground. In some ways, it balances the scales. I don't think that necessarily means that there should be gambling everywhere and everybody should just gamble on whatever. But I think there is an inherent imbalance there that isn't really corrected. And instead, it seems like they're going after individual players who might not necessarily be the root of the problem.
So what's the root of the problem, I suppose, is the question, right? Is it the advertising? Is it that it's in our faces so much?
Mm-hmm. I think it's that... Yeah, much like, you know, everything corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think placing a wager, you and me wanting to have a little bit of an interest in a game that we don't otherwise have interest in and putting $5 on it, like, I don't think there's any problem with that at all. I don't think, and if it's a thing that you enjoy and enjoy doing responsibly, again, I don't really have a problem with it. But I think so often it becomes baked into ads and in everything we see, and it's leaking into your VPN advertisements now. But I think there is, like, it's very easy for it to become so commonplace that you stop seeing that it's a game of chance, and you stop seeing, especially in those machines that we're talking about, or when you're gambling in a casino, the house always wins. And I think that it can become predatory very, very quickly. It can be corrupted even through legal means very, very quickly. And that has been the thing that has always made me more uncomfortable than anything else when it comes to gambling or betting is just how not even like fixed it could be or anything like that. Just that I think not knowing how everything works and walking up to get an education in it, I don't know if I'm going to trust the person who's taking my money to tell me everything and explain everything in detail. Maybe that's a me thing, but I think it's just, there's so many unknowns about it that I think it's a very tricky thing to navigate successfully sometimes.
I think what might be interesting to ask, Taylor, is what would the sport, particularly the sport in Europe, look like if there wasn't gaming advertising anywhere? As you mentioned, two-thirds of championship shirts with sponsors on them? Mm-hmm. I can't say...
Eight in the Premier League as well.
Yeah, 8 out of 20 in the Premier League. And a few seasons ago, it was consistently over half, over 50% of Premier League shirts had betting sponsorships on them. If you watch a broadcast in the UK, 9 times out of 10 at the halftime in the commercials, you'll have Ray Winston telling you to use the live odds to bet on the second half. So, yeah. I mean
and that's it right there, is that if you're a 10-year-old watching that, a 10-year-old... legally cannot make decisions, but right there you're seeing how standardized it is. It's on the shirt, it's on the advertisement. Here's a guy at halftime telling me I should gamble. Here's an advertisement for a betting company. It just, I'm wearing the shirt of the team and that has a betting logo on it. Just very quickly it becomes part of your world, and that's why they're advertising, to make shady, like, foreign betting companies that we know nothing about, but they sponsor Swansea, so it must be okay, right? Like, it's all about, that's why they're doing it. That's why they're spending that money, is because it makes them, if not a household name, at the very least, it's going to give you that immediate, well, they can't be that nefarious. Like, they're sponsoring a Premier League club. And if you want to know how well that reasoning works, just ask Inter why they don't have a shirt sponsor right now. Turns out crypto isn't always the smartest shirt sponsor to go after. And maybe gambling, not quite at that level, but not far behind it in my mind.
Yeah, metaverse, NFTs, crypto. That's a whole other discussion, I suppose, Taylor. But it's
But here's the thing. But I am more I am more, not even opposed to it, just sort of like cautious about it. I think gambling frightens me in the same way that, like, I don't want to try certain drugs for fear that, like, maybe I have an addictive gene in me and suddenly I'm like, well, that's all I want for the rest of my life. I worry how quickly you can go down that slope. It sounds like for you, I think you are the better example of how that isn't the case, that you can place wagers and enjoy gambling, but it, like, not have it bleed into every aspect of your life. So it does seem like there's a way of doing it that isn't bad, that does sort of just give you a little bit of fun, a little bit of a thrill, and that's enough.
I think one interesting way to look at it is, you mentioned like a 10-year-old watching those betting commercials at halftime. Those commercials might also have advertisements for alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Liverpool and Newcastle, their most iconic shirts have alcohol advertisements on them as well. So there's maybe a similar issue there. I'm not trying to devil's advocate this situation. But then you look at something like cigarette sponsorship, and that is very much being phased out in the UK and I believe in the US as well. So in Formula One, in motorsports, cigarette advertising was huge in like the 80s and basically paid for a lot of the teams. Like Ayrton Senna's most popular and Michael Schumacher's most popular cars had Marlboro and Benson & Hedges and all these cigarette brands all over them. And then it just got outright banned. And, you know, that's probably for the better, given what we know about cigarettes, but I don't know. I don't know what kind of point I'm trying to make here, but I suppose that, you know, censorship can work in these instances, but it would make the sport look very different, I suppose. If you look at 8 out of 20 Premier League shirts having sponsors on, if you look at the advertising hoardings around, and you look at all the media around Premier League and other European leagues, it would be a very different place without gaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. It's the selective enforcement of what is fashionable or not fashionable to some extent, because when cigarette companies are throwing out that money, they're everywhere. They're in newspapers, they're on billboards, they're on TV. Hey, Chester Cheetah's fun. I want to be the Marlboro man. He's a cool cowboy. Like, but then when we decide that's not okay, then that's not okay. But you can still have, you know, very funny beer advertisements and liquor advertisements. Those are allowed. Like, it does seem, I think liquor can be, and alcohol can be equally disastrous to a person if not sort of, I don't know, properly educated and informed, and if, especially if they're using it to medicate. And I just think, like, to what I think you're saying, at least, the idea that, like, we're selectively deciding this is okay and this is not, that does add further confusion to my understanding of things. Because, like, okay, so now cigarettes not okay, gambling only okay on the sleeve. Got it. Mm. Not on the shirt itself, on the front of the shirt, but the sleeve is fine. Why is that fine? Like, the distinction they're drawing there continues to not make as much sense to me.
The sleeve thing is very interesting, Taylor. So the Premier League announced recently a voluntary ban on shirt sponsorship by betting companies. So that's the primary shirt sponsor on the chest of the shirt. That's not going to begin until the 26-27 season, so post-World Cup. So they're giving them a little runway for these contracts to run out, basically. So the clubs who currently have sponsorship from gaming companies aren't too negatively affected. But, okay, they're gone from the chest. They can still be on the sleeve, as you say. Mm-hmm. And as you noted, the EFL is literally sponsored by Skybet. So, you know, the AFC Wimbledon shirts I have Skybet written on the sleeves of them. You can still advertise in stadium. You can still advertise around the stadium. You can still advertise on the broadcast. So the problem I have with this voluntary ban, it's made headlines, Taylor. It's an acceptance of the harm caused by gambling while simultaneously doing very little about it.
And yes.
It's that admittance of, you know, the harm without actually taking steps to, you know, do something about it that is problematic for me.
I also enjoyed the patting on the back of, like, we're taking this voluntary action to get it done by 2026 in a very rah-rah cheerleader, look how great we are as a league, while ignoring that La Liga banned this in after the 2020-2021 season. Italy, I believe, started regulating it in 2019. So, yes, they're taking action somewhat, and they're doing it multiple years from now when other leagues have already taken that action. I know there's existing deals, I think, that they probably have to honor. That's my guess as to why they've gone with 2026, is because that doesn't force Premier League clubs to break any sort of existing rules or existing contract, that is. But yeah, it still seems like they're removing them from the shirts to then have them elsewhere. If anything, I could see a reality, conspiracy brain could see a reality in which now, if there's no competition for the front of shirt, you can justifiably say to a gambling sponsor, we can't put you here, and you can still charge whatever company as much as you want. But if gambling companies historically are the ones who are willing to pay to be on the shirt, I'm guessing the amount that those gambling companies are now going to pay for the sleeve is going to get jacked up pretty high. And that will effectively be just as much money coming in, except now they'll be on the sleeve. But the Premier League can say, oh, well, they're not on the front, so aren't we great? We've replaced them with, I don't know, a liquor sponsor with a cigarette sponsor on the back. Don't worry about it. Don't ask questions.
Yeah, exactly. They'll start making the sleeves longer. The back will have more stuff on it. They'll find a way. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the regulations and where we go from here. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing. Taylor, we've talked a lot about gambling in the beautiful game, but perhaps we should take a little step back and look at how we got to this position and a little bit about how we are where we are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as I understand it, gambling has been in around the sport for a very long time. An interesting trend that I spotted when looking specifically at the history of shirt sponsorships, that is far more recent. And that definitely seems to coincide with the internet boom and the idea that there is money to be made from gambling sites. Fulham is the first Premier League club to have a gambling sponsorship on the front of their shirt. Can you guess what season that was, Ryan?
I'm going to say 2000 and Pizza Hut. I don't know.
You were, I mean, close.
My genuine guess would be 2006.
A little bit before, but not far off. 2002, okay. 2003, they had okay. Betfair. That escalates quickly. We get to the joint highest number would be 11 different clubs. That was in 2016, 2017, and then 2017, 2018. So we kind of hit that high watermark. But as of the 2019-20 season, of the £350 million that teams made from shirt sponsorships, about £70 million came from gambling brands. So about a fifth, I would say, which is actually less than I thought it would be. But I think it's because some of those deals are for Manchester United with the amount of money they can make for selling that shirt sponsorship, whereas Fulham, Newcastle, Swansea, whomever, we said, that's where you can make your money. And I think that's where it's become more accepted over the years is for smaller clubs to make up that difference or the difference such as they can by getting a gambling company. I think Newcastle under Mike Ashley, I think they were getting £6.5 million for the betting company they had on theirs. I don't think there's many other companies that are going to give them that amount of money to be on the front of a shirt for a team that isn't very good and is always sort of in that relegation conversation, but gambling companies will. And so that, to my understanding, is why it has been around for so long, is that gambling companies can afford to spend a little bit more, and so they will. But also, at least in England, people love a wager. And I think that is not limited to England. I think plenty of Europe embraces the gambling model as well. And so you've had to have that individual enforcement then as a result.
Well, what's interesting there, Taylor, about people in England loving a wager is if you look at the shirt sponsorships in the Premier League and how many of them are actually betting companies that operate in England, mm-hmm. most of them aren't. Nope. Most of them are Asian.
Mm-hmm.
And you see things like Classico Times being changed to suit Asian betting markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, advertising hoardings not in English language or even English alphabet going around in Premier League games. The market in certain Asian territories is huge for sports gaming. So the Premier League as a global product has very much positioned itself to be a vehicle for that.
Yep.
So it's a global, you know, not just a European concern.
I feel like with the big thing, it's an ongoing tradition that I find a way to reference The Wire or quote The Wire. And there's the great line in that show from Detective Lester Freeman, who I love, who says basically, like, you follow drugs, you're going to get drugs and you're going to get drug dealers. But you follow the money and you don't know where you're going to go. And I think that's what we're talking about here is there is so much money to be made off of football, specifically off of gambling. And a lot of it is in East Asian markets, as you spotted or as you've pointed out, that I think there is an acceptance. There is an incorporation into the planning. You talked about changing game times and the like. It's a strange thing that when you start to think about it too much, number one, you don't really know where you're going to end up. But number two, it also starts to make you not like soccer as much because it just reminds you that there's so many other things impacting this otherwise very simple thing that you love. But when you start to feel like there are things behind the scenes dictating decisions, dictating the way things are happening, it starts to feel less like a thing that you have any involvement in and more like a thing that other people are kind of making happen. And then you are allowed to watch it on TV.
Mm. You realize you are the product.
Yeah.
Or you are the consumer, whichever yep. one's worse. I'm not sure. But yeah, troubling. And so in terms of what is happening in terms of regulation, obviously in the UK market, I can speak specifically to that. There are gambling regulations that govern what betting companies can and can't do. And something which the whole industry was quite worried about in the last few weeks was this gambling white paper, which had been long mm-hmm. delayed. It was about 6 months, possibly more, delayed by the UK government, which was putting forward their recommendations for how gambling should be treated and legalized and presented in the UK. So not and a big part of this was to do with soccer. And the line that came out of this white paper, which came out 2 weeks ago, I believe, as we record, was that everyone now has Las Vegas in their pocket. So they needed to bring legislation in line with the digital age, in line with the fact that betting apps are everywhere on phones. And the last lot of legislation that was for in the UK, certainly, was for a time when it was like when I went to Selhurst Park back in the day and you filled in a little piece of paper. Very different world we're in now.
Yeah.
A kid can have a betting app on their phone if they find a way to do it, right?
That's terrifying. Right. Yep.
That is terrifying indeed. So there's a lot of that in this.
But they did have to check that box. It says they're 18, though, so it's fine. So even though they're 11 and they tick that box, now it's legal. Now we're good. They've done the one minimum requirement, and now they can gamble away. It's fine.
Yeah, this reminds me. My wife is a teacher, and she, I think there was one time she did an exercise and said, how many of my kids in my class are on Instagram? And like mm-hmm. three quarters of them put their hands up.
Yep.
And she was like, you're all breaking the law because
yep.
none of you are old enough to be on it. So
yep.
like, there's a whole thing. There's a whole thing there, basically. It's easy access to this kind mm-hmm. of thing is the concern of this white paper, which it wasn't as draconian as the gambling industry expected it to be. You could call it a little bit feckless, I suppose. But basically what it was promoting is greater affordability checks and looking after vulnerable players, which is a very healthy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we mentioned, I enjoy a little gamble, but it's $5 tops. I never gamble anything more than that, if I'm honest. I just do it to spice up games in which I don't have a horse to run. But vulnerable players, people who are, you know, who need to be looked after a little bit in that respect, they are the intention is for them to be helped out by mm-hmm. this legislation. So that's something that's happening in the UK. And I suppose what we're seeing here with the voluntary ban on shirt sponsorship, yes, I've argued that it's a little bit, you know, feckless when there's still other kinds of advertising everywhere in your face. But I think it might be the tide is changing a little bit. And how I mentioned how cigarette sponsorship left Formula One and it's left everything else. Obviously, it's left most sports. I wonder if the tide is turning a little bit. Public opinion is changing on this kind of thing, Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we might see maybe in the next 10 years this kind of thing going away a little bit.
That'd be interesting. I think that would make me happy. I'm pretty sure.
Would it actually though? Would it? Do you think? Because you mentioned your. I don't want to put you on the spot. You mentioned a slight lack of comfortability with the gambling in the sport, which is perfect. It's a very, very rational position to take. So, I mean, I suppose what the problem is here, Taylor, soccer isn't perfect. We know it's not. We just had a World Cup in Qatar. Mm-hmm. We have teams who are owned by nation states. There's a lot wrong in the game, and gambling is a part of that. So if we took gambling out, it would be, you know, maybe that would be a good thing in many people's eyes, but there'd still be a lot of imperfection in this game.
This is the thing. And also, like alcohol can be wonderful, and it can also be very, very dangerous. I would not say the temperance movement had it right when they said, let's ban alcohol entirely and the world will be better. In that situation, it just becomes bootlegging and more crime. And I think that is the thing, is if you try to remove gambling from it, it's just going to lead to more illegal gambling and more off-the-books gambling. And I don't think that helps anybody or makes anything better. I think so many people seem to enjoy it. It seems to be such a big part of society, global society, or at the very least, if we're talking about England in this case, it seems to be English society. I think it's 22.5 million people place a bet each month, according to the Betting and Gambling Council.
Wow! Really?
That's in the UK, and that's the like pro gambling. I don't know if they're trying to minimize that or maximize that.
So, for context, Taylor, there's like 70 million people in the UK, so that's a big proportion.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. So, I think to then deprive 22 million people of a thing that they want to do, I wouldn't go that far with it. But I think your point is well taken, that it becomes about societal perceptions and the way it's discussed and the way it's reported. I look at alcohol, and I think there is much more stigma about the advertising of alcohol. But like, and you'll still get the, you know, drink whiskey, it's the most fun. And then the little thing at the end that's like, but, you know, do it responsibly or whatever. Like alcohol ads are always like, look how glamorous and wonderful life could be. But, you know, do it responsibly. And that one little line, I don't think that one little line is stopping people from drinking or making people think, you know what, I should be more responsible. I think it's how often we see drunk drivers prosecuted and like tragedies happening relating to alcohol usage and drunk driving and the societal perception of overindulgence in alcohol. And I think society and the way we talk about it, the way it gets sort of covered, I think that tends to frame how acceptable it becomes in the mainstream. And I think, to your point, the more people start to identify predatory practices or, hey, my 12-year-old has a gambling app and they are down 500 because it's like somehow linked to my account or my wallet, my Apple wallet or whatever it might be, I think the more hesitation there will be from people to kind of talk about it as openly or make it as much of an open thing to present it to their kids as being a thing that's just, yeah, you do it, it's no big deal, without really pausing to think about, well, it's no big deal to me because I've been gambling for 30 years and I know my limits and I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. My 15-year-old, who's only just heard, like, gambling is no big deal, awesome. Like, I think that sends a very different message. So I think, to some extent, it's about changing the societal understanding and the way we talk about it. And also, I think, destigmatizing it at the same time, that it's not just some like, ooh, gambling, that's bad. Oh, he likes to gamble. Ooh, that's troubling. I think it goes that way, too, that you have to kind of put it out in the open, but then also be willing to discuss it positively and negatively.
Yeah, and I must admit, I do feel troubled. I mean, obviously, I don't have a problem with gambling personally, but I am aware that it is a problematic area in which I operate. And I think like there was an instance a few weeks ago where I cheered at the end of a game, and my daughter was like, "What's going on, Daddy?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, you know, that team won, and it was under 2.5 goals. Daddy did all right in that one." And I was like, "I was joking, but also I've just sort of told my child about the process of gambling on a game, and I don't know how I feel about that because that was kind of my upbringing as well, and I've not been harmed by it, but I understand and recognize that it is not an entirely positive thing that I've done there, or that I necessarily contribute to society by effectively selling betting tips, which is something I do.
Yeah. I have friends who will bet against their favorite team so that if their team wins, they're happy, and if their team loses, well, then they made money. And there's ways of hedging it. But even there, then you're betting against your club, or you're betting for it, like you're cheering for a particular outcome. It does sort of manipulate the way that you're consuming the media, for sure.
Mm. All right, Taylor. So I reckon in the next 10 years, we're going to see a different approach to gaming. And we're going to see a very different approach in the US. Because as I say, it's nascent stage. MLS has a betting partner. Individual teams will have their own betting partners, and many of them do have them at the moment. If you watch an NWSL game, you'll see line odds on the screen. So this is the way the industry is changing. This is the way broadcasters are monetizing their product at the moment by including gambling within it. I think as the trend to advertising gaming goes down in the UK, I kind of have a theory it's sort of on its ascendancy in the US just because it's a different stage of growth. So I think it's very two different markets. It's two very different markets we're talking about here. But if you had to predict in sort of 10 years where we're going to be at with this kind of thing, what would you say? Is it going to go the way of the dodo and smoking advertising?
I don't think so. But I think it will have to continue to evolve, because even when it starts becoming more common, like looking at daily fantasy, that to me is a move towards fantasy leagues take too long. They take too long to decide who's going to win the league. You can't make that much money off of them unless you're betting large amounts. But we also, the gambling companies, can't make money off of it. So let's make it into a daily thing where you can gamble the day of and you can make your own fantasy team that day and see what happens and see the results. There's an immediate gratification there that I didn't see coming, that I didn't think would be the way they sort of went with it. And so my assumption is that it will continue to be an evolution of that idea of how to make micro incidents, things that you can gamble on, which is what we're getting already with prop bets. But I think it'll be, my guess would be, more user-friendly and less of a like obvious I am betting, I am gambling, and more of a this is a fun game I'm playing about the teams that I like. Oh, and I can make some money off of it, which I think is how they're marketing it to begin with. I think that marketing will go a long way towards continuing for gambling to evolve. And I think that's deliberate. I think there's a reason we call it daily fantasy apps versus fantasy gambling apps, which is what they are. Like, so I think it will stay pretty common. I think that then leads to the problem of, I think footballers, if they're brought up in a world where everyone around them gambles and all their mates are gambling, well, like, the only reason they're not is because the league says, like, hey, don't do that or else. And that's where I think, as silly as this might be, it might be a totally ludicrous suggestion, but we've seen leagues trial different rules here and there. MLS does that pretty frequently. I think it'd be interesting if a league trialed a season in which there was like one gambling company, or maybe the league created its own gambling company, where players could place wagers, not on their games. And like, I don't know how you could then police like word of mouth, because then there's still that risk of like, well, I'm not betting on myself, but my buddy told me that his team isn't going to score today, so I'll bet on them. But I think if you tried to regulate it from a player standpoint and made it more of a thing that they could do with like bets being tracked, or they had to report it, or whatever it might be, I think it'd be interesting to see how responsible players are in that setting. I mean, it requires honesty and transparency, and maybe that's ridiculous, but I think where I end up having sympathy for people like Ivan Toney is that I think when it's culturally so accepted, it's a strange thing that it's an uneasy alliance that like the NFL seems to have of everyone gambles and there's money to be made on gambling, but you guys just don't do it. You guys aren't allowed to do it, or if you do, don't get caught. Like it doesn't seem like a very official rule, and it feels very rife for corruption and mistreatment. And so if there's a way to, I don't know, maybe make it more standardized or just more easily trackable and reportable, I don't know if that's the worst thing. It might be, but it might be interesting to try as just a way of doing something different.
There we go. Well,
Ryan does not agree based on that immediate response.
Yeah, I bet you none of that's true. I'll give you 2-1 odds. How's that?
I don't know anymore. I'll tell you what I will do. I'll give you 2-1 odds on you take Real Madrid and I'll take Man City for yesterday's game.
Tempting.
Okay. Tempting. Cool. I'll write it down. $100 wager, and we'll see what goes.
Oh, did you put it in a little book in your book?
I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
An actual book.
Wonderful stuff, Taylor. All right, this is an interesting topic for us to have discussed. I hope, listener, you enjoyed this one. Let us know your thoughts on this one, by the way. I don't think we've come to any grand solutions here. Mm-mm. But we shall see how this evolves, and I'm sure Ivan Toney isn't going to be the last player to fall foul of these rules, but maybe we'll see a less drastic approach to the bands. I'm not sure.
Short of Ivan Toney having wager on his own games, which we don't have any evidence that he did, is Kieran Trippier's not worse? Because I feel like his is like he had someone else do it for him, as I understand it, mm-hmm. but then also bet on his own move. Like, that is the number one thing you're trying to avoid. It's the equivalent of insider trading, as you said. That one does feel to me way worse and yet not nearly as punished. That one continues to confuse me.
Yeah, I suppose it does sound worse, but it does depend what was being bet upon by Ivan Toney. I find it hard to believe there was integrity issues there. I think he probably just liked to bet on other games. Yep. I would suspect. Yep. I'm thinking the best of him there. So we shall see. We won't see, actually, because we'll never find the information
out. No, you never know who's going to move in next to you at any given point, Ryan. You tend to have a litany of famous people living around you. So maybe one day Ivan Toney moves in next to you, and then we'll find out some answers.
We can but dream. I'll go door knocking, and we'll find out, Taylor. All right, let's wrap it up there. Taylor, thank you very much for your contributions to this conversation. I hope I made a little bit of sense in this one. You certainly did.
I feel the exact same in that entire statement, so thank you, my friend.
And thank you, listener, for joining us on this one. Let us know what you thought of this Big Thing episode. We'll be back on the feed very shortly. But for now, bye!